Hello and welcome to The Great Movies Pod, a retrospective film review show where we watch and talk about each of the films discussed in Roger Ebert's seminal film essay collection, The Great Movies. I'm Jana Gardner.
And I'm Dylan Cuellar.
And this is another special bonus episode for you, a Nick-less episode. He's off doing exciting things or possibly just working his job. So we are here to do a bit of a fill-in episode and do something that's hopefully going to become a tradition for us. This is our second year in a row of Dylan and I doing a sort of not quite mid-year, but pre-fall prestige season movie check-in. So as we record this on August 28th, we are days away from Venice, a week away from Telluride, and then Toronto's right after that. Yep. So we are about to roll into sort of the big time fall festival movie season, which hopefully this year is going to be back for real for the first time since 2019. I know last year was still a little, like, you know, halvesies on a lot of stuff, but the sense I get is that for those three festivals at least, they're back to 100% pre-COVID programming and scheduling. So hopefully we get some really exciting stuff coming out of those movies, or coming out of those festivals, because today we're going to talk about some of the highlights, highest profile movies that have come out in the year so far. And I gotta say, not the strongest batch of movies so far this year.
There's not a lot of good ones, but the good ones I think have exceeded what some of the other good movies have been in past years.
I think there's some really high highs. Absolutely. And we'll definitely talk about some movies that we, you know, both thought were really excellent, or one of us thought was really excellent. But just compared to last year, I feel like, I don't know, there's something missing and I can't quite put my finger on it.
I don't think any of us disliked any of the movies too much. I probably had the most one that was disliked, but I still gave it a 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Yeah, I didn't dislike, but also when we picked these movies, I had seen basically all of them. You had seen basically none of them.
So yeah, that's true.
I kind of only picked movies I mostly enjoyed. Although there's one on here that I'm like, yeah.
Really, you didn't like Turning Red?
I know what it is. I was like, it was either Turning Red or another movie we were going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And again, but nothing, no dislike movies.
Yeah, me too.
I'm trying to remember what our list was
from last year. Did we have a movie we disliked from last year?
I don't think so. And do I have any idea what we talked about last year? Not really.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I could look it up, but that would take me a while. But yeah, I'm hopeful for the rest. And I will say, there are some movies that I've really, really loved this year that also just aren't on our list because of timing issues and things like that. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just been an interesting movie year. And I'm hoping that it continues to be one as we move forward into the fall. But want me to run down the movies we are going to discuss up top? So in chronological order of release date, the movies we're going to highlight today, just so you know, are Kimmy, Turning Red, The Batman, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Ambulance, RRR with an asterisk,
Maverick,
Crimes of the Future, and Nope. So a lot of movies from auteurs, some from major studios, some gigantic hits, some very much less so. But I think a good variety, a good range of movies.
Yeah, I think you could say all of these are somewhat auteur, like artistically driven works.
Yes, I think you absolutely can, actually.
The closest thing maybe wouldn't be like Turning Red, but I think that sort of is a little bit outside of the box for Pixar movies as well.
Absolutely. And I think Domi Shi, the director of that movie,
she's making a name for herself of like the stories she tells.
She's the director who made Bao, right?
Yes.
I have very complicated feelings about Bao.
One of the most shocking movies I've ever seen.
Truly, truly a harrowing short film experience. But I really sincerely love and appreciate that that Pixar, because they are not prone to doing this, took the opportunity to give her a feature to direct, or to allow her to direct her feature, which is not something that Pixar typically does with either with women directors in general, and even with people who make their successful shorts. They don't always get to move over to directing their features, because that's kind of can be clicky over there. So I respect that. Even though I think she might be the only first time feature director on this list. Yeah. So
that's true.
Yeah. So yeah, we're going to just sort of run through these. I think we're going to try to avoid spoilers unless it's really necessary, or for some of these movies that came out way back in the spring. And if it's not like a twist movie, you know, we'll probably just talk about the whole plot. For the movies that have come out later in the year, or if they are twist reliant, we'll make a note and maybe save any sort of spoilery discussion for the end if that becomes necessary.
Yeah.
So, all right. So the first movie we are going to talk about is Steven Soderbergh's Kimmy, which came out, back in March, I guess?
I think before that.
Yeah, it came out way towards the beginning of the year. It was an HBO Max direct film, like pretty much all of Soderbergh's are now. It stars Zoe Kravitz and is sort of a little paranoid thriller.
It's Rear Window.
Yeah, it's Rear Window.
It's Rear Alexa.
It's Rear Alexa. yeah, it's about a young woman who... is trapped in her apartment, one, because she does suffer from agoraphobia, and that has only become exacerbated by the fact that the COVID-19 pandemic is happening, and so she barely ever leaves her own apartment. We see her go out into the world a couple of times, but in a sort of, it's a very difficult experience for her, and she is a woman who works for a tech company, like monitoring Alexa devices, basically.
Yeah.
And she hears something that she wasn't supposed to hear, and... scary things ensue from there, and it's sort of like a little, I think, sort of tightly plotted little paranoid action thriller that I liked quite a bit. What did you think of Kimmy?
I thought it was, I mean, this is just Soderbergh stuff, but it was slick. It was exciting, and I wouldn't say it was my favorite movie, but like, God, what a good movie. Like, what a good time at the movies.
It's kind of...
You can go at the movies with this one.
What a good time on your couch watching a movie on HBO Max. No, I think that's exactly right. I think it's a perfect example of what Soderbergh has been doing in his sort of, like, post-retirement phase. You know, when he said he was retiring and he's made, like, 7 movies since then.
what was the movie what did he make and then say he was going to retire after?
I want to say maybe Side Effects.
Really?
Yeah, which I haven't seen. It was right around that era. I think, because then the first movie he sort of made, like, I'm going to shoot movies on my iPhone now, I think was Unsane.
Then it would have been after Logan Lucky.
Logan Lucky, no, that was post also. He said he wasn't going to make movies anymore, and then Logan Lucky came out after that, and he did that weird self-distribution, self-PR thing. So, yeah. And I saw Logan Lucky in the theaters, and he had this, like, great plan for how he was going to promote it, and then nobody else saw Logan Lucky in theaters, and that's why, one of the reasons why I think we're doomed to this continued Soderbergh release strategy, although... with all of the chaos happening over at Discovery, Warner's, HBO, that crazy guy over there who's running the show now has said he's recommitting to theatrical distribution for a lot of movies. And if that means I get to see the third Magic Mike movie in a theater, I won't be mad about that.
That might be the one good thing he's ever said.
Right? That might be the one thing that I'm like, all right, I'll allow it. but yeah, I thought Zoe Kravitz was really
fantastic. She's so good in the movie.
In Kimmy, and she has to carry so much of it.
Yeah, I was trying to think who would, like, maybe the next most supporting actor would be. And it's not like there's not other people in the movie, but no one else really has a role There's the boss who, and this isn't really spoilers, this comes up pretty early, but he's basically the guy that assaulted someone.
Yeah, he's the bad guy.
You hear over the Kimmy device. And, you know, he shows up in the beginning and you hear his voice and he maybe shows up in a couple parts, but like he's not in much. There's a guy she's kind of hooking up with on the side. He's here and there.
Yeah, the neighbor. There's a great, very memorable one scene performance by Rita Wilson.
Holy shit. She scared the crap out of me.
The perfect film encapsulation of like HR is there to protect the company, not to protect you kind of situation.
Did that remind you of The Assistant?
Yeah, very exactly. It was a very, very similar vibe to the Matthew McFadgen role in The Assistant.
Is it Fadgen? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, it's the Y comes after the D, so it's F-A-D-Y-E-N.
Oh, I always thought the Y came before the D.
Yeah, I did for years, and then I heard otherwise, and I was like, oh, yeah, I believe it is McFadgen.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, so it's kind of just this, and then, like, a lot of other, like I said, she goes out, like, there's the neighbor, there's, Rita Wilson, there's the boss, who's actually played by Derek Del Gaudio, who's, like, not even really an actor. He did that one man magic show that everybody went called In and of Itself that people went really bananas for a couple years ago. But yeah, so it's really just a showcase for her. And like I said, it's Rear Window Amazon style. I can't remember what they call the fake Alexa.
Kimmy.
Oh, that's right. That's
it kept confusing
it's the Kimmy
me because
device.
I assumed Kimmy was the name of
her name.
Zoe
no, her
Kravitz.
Name's Angela.
Angela.
Yeah, you're right. It's called Kimmy. Duh. And so it's a Kimmy device. And yeah, and it has, for as much as it is kind of this like little one person psychological paranoid thriller, it does have like a pretty thrilling climax. Like when she has to sort of save herself, that is super intense but super fun. Some great needle drops, some great nail gun action.
There was also a lot of good humor, and one of my favorite things was when she's talking with one of her like colleagues, and they keep on saying Kimmy because they're talking about the Kimmy device, and their Kimmys keep turning on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you have any connected devices in your home.
We have Alexa.
I do too. And like the way you have to talk around it when you want to talk about it is something you start to notice, and something that makes me more mindful of maybe muting it when I don't need to be actively engaging with it. But yeah, because you have to be like, you know, we could set up the thing over there to and you really gotta you really start noticing how you have to be careful for that. So like I said, I definitely recommend this one to people. It's on HBO Max. And it's good. And I believe, it's 89 minutes long. Like,
it's so short.
Watch it. It's great.
What'd you think of the way they shot the like agoraphobia scenes where she's like going out into the world?
Really good. It you know, kind of does that thing where it puts you in the like unstable, everything feels overwhelming. And like I said, it's interesting that you learn that, you know, she was already suffering from agoraphobia. So it's not just like COVID induced, but that obviously has made it even harder for her.
Yeah.
And so you have to like watch her, like put her mask on, put her hood up and like venture out into the world around crowds of people.
They did a really good job doing the COVID, like COVID-19 being a large part of the movie, but not like making it be a COVID movie.
Right. Yeah. It's only a sort of COVID movie in that, like, yes, you know, she's putting on masks and people are wearing masks out and about when she goes, and that it makes you understand why she'd be even more stressed about leaving. But yeah, it's not, you could make this movie set, you know, any other time, at least in the time that Alexa exists, and it would still work basically the exact same way.
I was curious to ask, is this a sci-fi film? I don't know how much of like Alexa's back end work is like this, or if they have the technology to like do some of the stuff she does on the computer that looks like a sci-fi movie.
I mean, that's the question, right? It feels like a sci-fi movie, but for all I know, frickin' people at Amazon can do all these things.
This could be a period piece.
Exactly. Yeah, for all I know, they were doing this back in 2015. Yeah, because it does. It has that sort of like high level technology and the way she's like moving files around and visualizing files and stuff. My take on that was that I think Soderbergh was just trying to make something that in the real world would not be remotely compelling or visually interesting, kind of make it seem more so. But it does make it feel a little sci-fi-y. I also sort of, this is a much longer discussion in terms of like, can something be sci-fi? Like, does it have to be impossible? Or can it just be something that is like very technological that maybe exists? Like,
sure,
you know, I guess that's where you get sort of like near future, near sci-fi kind of stories. And this kind of feels like that, even though, like we said, Amazon can probably do all this and more. So,
yeah,
good movie. Do recommend. I don't think like this is not a movie that's going to be coming up in discussions at the end of the year or awards or anything, because it was just a little pretty much already forgotten sort of a movie on HBO Max. But, oh, but absolutely. I don't mean for us. I mean like in the discussion. Oh no, I there's a lot of things I loved about this movie. But yeah, it just was.
How did this rank for you in the new Soderbergh era?
It's pretty high. It's really pretty high for me. Although I also really loved Let Them All Talk in 2020. You know, I love that movie. So
you love The Laundromat.
Yeah, I like this one a little bit more than The Laundromat.
No Sudden Move is really special for me.
No Sudden Move. Yeah. The thing is, Laundromat, so I haven't seen Unsane, but Laundromat aside, I've really been enjoying this latter Soderbergh era. Mm-hmm. I pretty much like all of them that I've seen other than The Laundromat. So, but this is pretty high up there. It's up there for me. This, Let Them All Talk, No Sudden Move, like even Logan Lucky, they're just all good movies that I've been having a good time with. So
thumbs up.
Do you recommend? Thumbs up, absolutely.
Cool. Do you give it out of 4?
I think it was probably a 3 out of 4. That's for me. Like a high 3 though.
Yeah.
Strong 3 out of 4. All right. And so then our next movie is Turning Red, as we already started our discussion of a little bit, the Pixar movie that came out back in March, directed by Domi Shi, that I had forgotten until I was looking up information about it today. Just, like, didn't get a theatrical release.
It's maddening.
Straight to frickin' Disney Plus. Which, like, you know, in March of this year, like, I...
There was nothing going on. That was bad. That was
like,
real bad.
That was, like, coming out of the last, like, Omicron wave and stuff, and people were leaving their houses again, and it just didn't... And so I looked it up, and this movie made, like, $20 million in other... it was put out in theaters in territories that, like, don't have Disney Plus, basically. But that's just... Like, for a Pixar movie, man, I don't know. I believe the same thing happened to... my beloved Luca from last year.
Our
beloved Luca from last year, where they just, it's like, obviously in the pandemic with, you know, Soul and everything, they had to put certain things on Disney Plus when theaters were just literally not open. But I don't know, continuing it as they have, and especially for the, like, I mean, like Luca that I love so much, the movie like Turning Red, which was so well received. It's very frustrating. Turning Red, why don't you talk about that movie a little bit?
Well, I think it's interesting because when I saw Turning Red, it was right when it came out, which was before we even did our award season episode. So for me, it's very much a 2021 movie in my mind, because I always kind of reset when the
I do too.
We do our awards, especially because at the beginning of the year, not a lot comes out.
Yeah.
But this is the movie you saw for the first time yesterday, so it's your most recent watch. Even
it is my most recent watch. Yeah, it is. And I ended up enjoying it more than I thought I was going to. You know, as I've probably said this like a million times on this podcast, I don't watch a ton of animated movies. I don't really have any particular like emotional connection to most Pixar movies in general. Although, like I said, I really loved Luca, and I think Coco is a perfect movie. I think Coco and Luca are like my sort of top tier Pixars that I've really loved. And then, you know, I mean, it is not to like besmirch the good name of the Toy Story franchise or anything. I just don't have as much of a connection to those movies as a lot of people do. And I just, yeah, I'm not, I don't watch a ton of animated movies. But I really liked Turning Red. It started off, like, I was worried it was gonna be a little bit too zany when it started. There's like a lot of like jokes and hijinks at the beginning. And then something that's also interesting is something that I thought was that had been, like, when I had read about Turning Red, sort of reviews and comments that I'd seen about it, like, had talked about a twist of the movie that then was basically revealed 20 minutes in, and basically just like, is this a movie we're fine kind of spoiling? This came out in,
like March, the fact that her family is...
The mom. Like, when it was like, oh, her mom went through this too. I was like, I thought that was the twist of the movie. So, like, that's actually kind of the conceit of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess the twist could be that her mom is not a regular panda. Her mom is a kaiju panda.
Yeah, it's a kaiju panda.
But I also knew that as well. So, like, then when that, I was like, oh, I guess that's the part that's kind of a twist. But I'll tell you, so I watched the whole movie.
Did Matt watch it?
No, he did not watch it with me, but that's all right. Watched the whole movie. I think it looks beautiful. Animation style is so fun. Like, for all my thinking, like, oh, this is a little bit too zany, I actually really liked the bright colors and and that style. You know, I think the stuff with the group of friends and all the boys at the school and everything is like very charming and funny.
The boys are so funny.
So funny. But like, really, and this will not like surprise you in the least, like, when it really connected with me was like at the very, very end, basically when they all connect on the astral plane, like, that to me, I sort of was like, oh, now I get this. Like, now I'm feeling it, and I feel like it's not so over the top, and I, like, I'm feeling the like connection, like sort of the sentimentality, the
I thought you would have enjoyed the like school hangout vibe more, because that's one genre that I like refer to you with.
Yeah, it's a little, they're a little young. They're like a little, you know, I guess they're eighth graders. I will say I was also not allowed to go to concerts in eighth grade, so relatable.
Yeah.
But I did like the friend group. I thought they were very funny. And all this stuff, like I said, with the different boys and well drawn little characters.
Character design was great.
Yeah, but so you really loved this, right?
I wouldn't say I like really loved it. I just was kind of surprised by it. When I read about it, it sounded a lot like Luca, and Luca was like, that was the best thing they'd done for a while. Mm-hmm. And this was like, yeah, that actually holds up pretty well in this sort of like Luca-ish sort of canon.
I didn't like it as much as I liked Luca, but I'm kind of with you that I think Luca is one of their like best movies in a long time. So that was going to be hard to beat. But it was cute. I literally just like pulled it up on Letterboxd, and I'm looking at like the still from it now. And I just think the animation is, I love the character design. It's so expressive. And it's just fun to look at.
If you're looking at the Letterboxd page of it, there's a poster of the panda making like a scared face.
Yeah.
And then above it, the headline photo is the character.
The mom and daughter.
Mel. Making literally the same face the panda's
face,
making,
but
she's just in human form, and
yeah, it's cute.
They do a really good job, like translating sort of this.
I saw a review or a comment, or maybe a Letterboxd review that said like the subtle analogy for going through puberty, and I was like,
is it that subtle?
I don't think I would say it's actually even less subtle than I thought. I kind of thought the whole thing was going to be a metaphor, but like it's. It's not like expressly like when
like the big thing was they talked about periods at a
yes like and her mom literally is like, let me get you pads, let me like make you some tea, like, so it's not, I mean, yes, it's a metaphor, but they also specifically sort of tie it to, okay, you're 13, you're feeling emotions, you're going through changes, you are turning red, like, it's not and that's not a critique of it.
I actually kind of liked how overt it was, because it talked about things like a lot of Pixar movies
would not
address, and I think it was interesting sort of how it would parallel.
Pixar movies are like, it's not something they would normally address. It feels like it is for a slightly not for slightly older, it's for that age. It's like, I feel like it's perfectly designed for like 9 or 10 year olds who like want to be 13. You know, kind of right in that. Like, I'm not sure if 5 or 6 year old, they wouldn't really get any of that part. They might just like the bright colors and the big pandas. But I feel like there's a sweet spot of like a 10-year-old who would find this very interesting to watch.
Yeah.
So, Turning Red. That's all available on Disney Plus right now.
Thumbs up?
Yeah, thumbs up. Absolutely.
Out of 4?
I think also a 3.
3.
Yeah. Probably a little softer of a 3. It's so hard out of 4. I don't know why we do this. I mean, I know why we do this, but I don't know why Roger did this to us. So our next movie we are going to talk about also came out a few months ago now. A little movie people might have heard of called The Batman.
The Batman.
The Batman.
There's an audio clip in Parks and Rec where Leslie Knope is on like a NPR talk show from Eagleton, and the guy I think he's like a famous Simpsons person actually.
He does
this line reading where it's like the Batman, and for some reason, given the whole the Batman naming mechanism, I always hear his stupid voice, the Batman.
The Batman.
Yeah. So as we sort of alluded to earlier, this is probably the movie that I'm like the least excited about.
Yeah, this is the one. I remember your hilarious incident where you messaged us.
Texted you guys in the middle of the movie.
You were at the Batman and Nick was like, "Jana, aren't you watching the Batman?" You were like,
"Took
no.
a break. Went out for a walk.
I'm gonna take a breather.
I took a breather."
And I mentioned there was a movie I almost forgot to finish, and it was this one, because I watched half of it, and then was like, I'll finish it up soon.
Because we have
then
more than one movie on this list that exceeds 3 hours long. So, people. Although, I'm sorry, fair shake to the Batman. It is 3 minutes short. It's 1 hour and 77 minutes long. Yeah, so, the Batman, which I didn't dislike it. As we talked about, it might be the darkest movie ever made. Like, just
watching on your laptop at 3 in the afternoon is not.
Yeah, it's an audiobook experience at that point. Like, you might as well just be listening to it. Because I've actually watched it twice. Because I watched it in theaters, and then I rewatched it at home. I was listening to the Blank Check commentary they did on it, and so I threw it on. More it's just so it's like, I've seen it, so I'm sort of listening while I'm doing other things, and if they reference something, I want to see what's happening. I have it playing. But I will say, half the time when that happened, I looked at my TV, and I'm like, well, that's a black screen, so I really can't see what's happening. I realize this is, like, the surface level. Like, talking about how this movie is 3 hours long and incredibly dark.
Wow.
Is, like, the hack.
We're breaking ground.
Of the year. Great, great film analysis. But
I gotta say, this film might have my favorite supporting cast of performances of any of the ones we watched. And I didn't even know that John Turturro was in this movie. Was
he much of the marketing? No.
I don't remember.
He wasn't in much of the marketing. The marketing
and
was
really...
And I was
like,
hey. Yeah. And the marketing was Robert Pattinson, Zoe Kravitz, Paul Dano, and Colin Farrell, I feel like was most of the marketing. And then you still
forgot Andy Serkis was
Alfred. Yeah.
Which he's too young to be Alfred. Like they
went for like a younger, like feistier Alfred in this one, which was a choice they made.
Blown up, so.
Hey, he lives, right? He lives. Yeah.
Yeah, he lives. But I see Andy Serkis and like he's like talking about Pattinson, like, you know, it's like when you were a boy and I was working for your Master Wayne, and I'm like, you were probably 16. You were like a footman.
Yeah.
You weren't anything.
Yeah, I was gonna say, were you really like butler to his parents? Like,
no.
I have questions. But I will say, speaking of great Zoe Kravitz, like I think she's really wonderful in this as well. Like, what a year for her. I thought she was, as Selena Kyle, I thought she was really fantastic.
What do you think of Dano as the Riddler?
He was good. I like him. I don't love the Riddler, like, as a Batman villain.
One of the things I was going to say is his Riddler sucked in this movie.
Yeah. The riddles were, like, not that interesting. No. My sort of weird 90s kid opinion is that I didn't really like Jim Carrey as the Riddler that much in that Batman movie. Although I love that movie, but I don't know. I don't love the Riddler, but I like Paul Dano a lot. But yeah, I think his Riddler character is kind of just okay. I was much more interested in the John Turturro character, and then
Oh my God, he was so good.
Yeah.
Like, what was the last time Turturro was this good?
You know what he's really good on? A little television show called Severance. He's so good on Severance. But that is a very, very, very stressful TV show that I almost didn't watch due to how stressful it is. But he is really, really wonderful in that. But in terms of movies?
The last movie I think I remember liking him in is Taking the Pelham 123.
Oh, you know what he's really good in? God, and this is the only thing going back. Holy moly, what is with his output over the past
15 years?
Holy shit. I'm looking at his Letterboxd sorted by release date, and this is upsetting. But you know what he is very good in from just a few years ago, from about 4 years ago that nobody saw, was Gloria Bell.
I heard about that movie. I never saw it.
Wonderful, wonderful little movie. He plays sort of the main love interest in that to Julianne Moore. And he's quite good in it.
Gotcha.
But literally, other than that, he's been doing good work on TV. He's good in Severance. He was on that TV show, The Night Of. People really liked him in that. But I'm looking at these movies, and I am not seeing anything here. Transformers movies.
A lot of Transformers.
Basically, back to Pelham 123. You're right. I think other than Gloria Bell, that would be the next one.
Yep.
Dude.
Turturro. But Turturro came in, was just throwing like 98 out of a bullpen.
Yeah.
Painting the corners. It was beautiful to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. He is fantastic.
Colin Farrell was a blast.
I still don't know that he convinced me, not that it was his job to, that it was necessary to have him play that part. But he was fun. I just still don't understand. Did you see the clip this week from Danny DeVito's lie detector?
I'm a better penguin.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I love that guy. Colin's great, but I'm the better penguin.
Yeah. And he's right. Batman Returns is like, maybe the best superhero man.
Same thing about Michael Keaton, where he's like, oh yeah, they're all good, but this is the real Batman. And I was like, buddy.
But there was a clip going around, I remember when the Batman first came out, where Colin Farrell said something so incomprehensible to me. Like, I literally couldn't understand what he was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Where he goes, oh, God, what are you showing me? Come on.
Holy God, what are you showing me?
Hey,
come on.
And, like, it was so funny to get to that moment in the movie. It's like, oh, okay. I have subtitles and context now. I get what he's saying.
I think that might be something that's in the trailer, because I remember there being a part of the trailer where it cuts to him and he's just like, rah, 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 rah. I know you're the Penguin, but yeah. So yeah.
Lastly, I want to talk though, Jeffrey Wright, our fucking
hell
boy.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Jeffrey Wright.
There's a scene where he breaks a Batman out of the holding cell or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Sick. He's so good working off actors and stuff. He should be in every movie.
Now that's an actor where you don't ask what's the last thing he was good in, because it's like, look,
everything?
In the past 3 years, like 4 years, he just has been good in things like so consistently. He's good in everything. A real highlight of the Batman for me. Like, I think we talked about previously, but wish he had more to do, but I know mm-hmm. Gordon only ever gets so much to do. But he's great.
Mm-hmm.
So no complaints there. Any other Batman thoughts? I guess they're gonna make another one of these.
I guess I was just ready for it to be over about halfway when they capture the Penguin. Like, that felt like a pretty good roundup for me, and then it kept going. And then Then they capture the Riddler, and then
it still keeps going.
Town, and then there's an assassination and the flood.
Yeah.
And it's just too much. But I think when I got to see it better, I thought Reeves's direction was pretty good and performances were good. I'm kind of okay with Pattinson. I don't think he was a great Bruce Wayne, but he wasn't really Bruce Wayne through a lot of it. This is probably the most Batman movie since maybe Batman 1.
Yeah, it's there's very little Bruce Wayne in it. And I think that's a choice. I think
it's a good choice.
What the movie, I think, is, you know, and this is something that a lot of the Batman movies have sort of emphasized, but I think this one really leans into it, is that, like, he feels comfortable as Batman and uncomfortable as Bruce Wayne. Sort of like the whole, like, you know, Superman and Clark, you know, who's the real person and who's the disguise. But, like, for this Batman, it feels like as Batman is where he wants to be, and he's uncomfortable in his skin as Bruce Wayne, and so we just barely never see him as Bruce Wayne. Yeah, he doesn't have... There's none of the scenes in... I mean, he goes to some fancy events and things, but there's none of those, like, Bruce Wayne playboy hosting a gala that we get in basically every other version of Batman. This is kind of a reclusive Bruce Wayne, not a big... He's not doing the I'm a society playboy to hide his Batman-ness that even Christian Bale's Batman did, so.
Yeah. All right, thumbs up?
Thumbs up.
Enough,
yeah. Out of three? Out of 4 stars? Probably 2.5, I guess.
3 for me.
For me, yeah. It's
this
like
would be my softest 3, though, I think.
Yeah, this is, it's just a little under for me. But I mean, I'll watch the next one when they make it, like, you know, so I'm not better than that. That's the Batman. All right. So now we're going to have a huge knockdown, drag out fight about Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I'll let you win this fight. I just have nothing to say, really.
No, I mean, I'm curious why you feel like you have. I'm genuinely, and I understand that feeling of, like, I just didn't dig it and everybody else loves it. So what is there to say? But I'm genuinely curious, sort of, what if you think. Maybe what stopped you from connecting with it, or what...
The Daniels. I fucking hate them.
Oh, see, I also liked Swiss Army Man.
I didn't.
And I find that I liked Swiss Army Man with reservations, and I completely get why someone is like, no, thank you. That movie is repulsive. Get out of here.
I don't even think it's repulsive. I just thought it was boring.
Oh, no, I didn't think it was boring.
I didn't think
this was boring?
Yes.
Wow.
Like, that's the thing is, I don't know how I can really explain it very well, but, like, I never was interested in what was going on screen.
Wow. That's, like, interesting.
I feel like they're throwing so much feces in my face that at some point it's like, I just don't want poop thrown at me.
Oh, I thought, like, they were throwing, like, glitter and candy in my face, and I was like, keep it coming. I love it. Throw it at me.
You know, I was at a film expo today, and, they, for some reason, had this bubble machine that, like, produced bubbles and then blow into the crowd.
A lot of
and Cassie and I kept on, like, swallowing bubbles and getting bubbles in our eyes. And that's probably my, like, it's cute. It looks good from a distance. But, like, when I'm in it, I'm just like, I just want to get out of it.
Was this an indoor or outdoor event?
Outdoor and indoor.
Oh, okay. Well, I would say those bubble machines, those are pretty popular at races, at, like, 5Ks, 10Ks, marathons. Ooh. They'll have those at, like, the Finnish festival. But I was picturing you at an indoor event, and I was like, don't put bubbles indoors. That is an outdoor activity, please.
The problem with it was, like, under, like, a concealed tent. So it was,
right,
like,
so
half
you're
indoor, half...
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess I'll just say, I mean, at this point, it just feels boring to say that I loved Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like... It's my favorite movie of the year so far. I was, like, in from minute one. I think the visuals were overstimulating, but in a way that, like, kept me engaged. And in what has just been, like, I guess every year has a lot of, like, parent-child movies.
This and Turning Red are very similar.
This and Turning Red are very, very similar.
Mothers causing daughters and immigrant family.
This worked a lot better for me than Turning Red. I think because, like, even, yeah, I realized I said that I also thought Turning Red was too zany, but this, for me, I was completely locked in on. I don't know. I found it very moving. I found it very fun. I liked sort of the zipping around into the different universes and things. Like,
there was one universe I liked.
Oh, the Wong Kar-wai universe?
No.
Really? You didn't like that? You did not like the In the Mood for Love universe?
Let me tell you one thing. If someone else tries to do Wong Kar-wai and does it amateurly, I'm just not into
it. Sorry, I wish my eye roll there could have been audio captured.
I'll try to look
audio.
Up like an eye roll voice.
Oh, no, you know the Liz Lemon. Oh, brother.
Jack, I want you to pay close attention to the following over-the-top eye roll. Oh, brother.
Yeah, exactly.
That is her doing a out loud eye roll. No,
one universe I liked was the Rock universe.
The Rock universe, yeah.
Because I felt like I finally got the movie to slow down, and I felt like the characters actually got some time to talk, even though they're not really talking. I felt like so much of the talking was either a lot of exposition that just made my mind curl, mm-hmm. or a lot of thematic exposition about how much we need to love each other.
You know what? I think we do need to love each other more.
I don't disagree. And there's movies where I think this works. I think I like it in Paddington because Paddington just sort of feels like a...
Sorry. Whereas with I'm in Paddington, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I get it, Paddington. Everyone should be nice to each other. It's just interesting where that like divide. I think it just depends on what works for you and what doesn't.
I think what works for me in Paddington is Paddington just feels like a family movie. And mm-hmm. there's been family movies in the past where it's just sort of like, let's all get along, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it sort of feels, the movie is simple enough and cute enough that it really is able to sort of reinforce that message without feeling like it's talking too much. But when there's like action scenes and people are having like their throats ripped out and then someone comes up and is like, we need to be kind to each other. It's like, I don't fucking care.
Yes. Give it to me. Rip people's throats out and then talk about your feelings.
need to talk about Ke Huy Quan though.
Oh, you didn't like him? You thought he was bad?
I promise you he's getting at least one bean for me in supporting actor this year.
I thought he was phenomenal.
I could not believe... I mean, Michelle Yeoh was very good, and that was kind of a lot of the discussion I heard and going in. And so I was pretty prepared for that, but holy fuck, he was so good.
Yeah, poor Michelle Yeoh is like just one of the greatest, most talented, accomplished actresses out there. So it's kind of hard to be like, well, of course she carries this whole movie. She's Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, she rules. And so I feel like she... I think she's maybe even getting a little underappreciated just because we know she can do this.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, from the second that the first alternate version of him rolls onto screen, like...
Are you talking about in the elevator?
I think it's in the elevator. The one who shows up at the IRS office and then does martial arts with the fanny pack.
That was another one of my problems, actually, is I just didn't think they handled hand-to-hand combat very well.
Mm.
The directors
I'm not
did.
Knowledgeable enough about that stuff to know if it's very good or not. Because I thought it looked really cool, but I am not a connoisseur of
neither am I, really. I just, I didn't feel anything. Like, I wasn't really following what was going on. People were just getting thrown around. I couldn't feel it.
Oh, I felt it all. I really love it. I feel like a sucker for liking it because everyone's talked it up so much. So again,
I don't think you're a sucker. I think you're just normal. I'm the weird one here.
No, there was plenty of people who were like, what's wrong with all of you? And I also think, and I don't think this is the case with you necessarily at all, but I do think there are a lot of people for whom like they heard for 3 months how it was the greatest movie ever made. And then they watched it and they're like, okay, whatever.
Well, the
and
thing is, I heard I that too, it. But I also was like, it's the Daniels. I didn't
like
Swiss
Army
Man.
Yeah, you knew
Army
you
Man.
Probably were not going to
so
buy
I,
it.
So I never really had my expectations tempered or raised by
Got
all
it.
The ridiculous
yeah,
discourse.
That makes sense.
But it still kind of came under my expectations. I was expecting a 3 out of 5 or a 4.
Yeah.
Especially because Michelle Yeoh, martial arts. Mm-hmm. It's something that would be up my alley. And it has my favorite actress of all time in it, Jamie Lee Curtis.
I was going to say, the fact that you and I have not talked about Jamie Lee Curtis yet in this movie.
Who is our girl.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
From day one.
Yeah, OG. I'm I'm frankly just happy she's in it.
Me too. And she really has like so much fun in it. She's stomping around.
She looks like she had a freaking blast. And I really like where that character ended up. Like, I really liked the resolution of sort of her little arc that I wasn't even sure the movie was going to bother having. And so I liked that that she got sort of a little mini arc to resolve. Yeah, and it seems like she had a freaking blast making that movie. I'm sure she did. But yeah, I don't know, man.
One moment of positivity to throw this movie's way. And it's in, I'm going to try to pronounce this correctly, it's Stephanie Hsu,
who plays the daughter. Yeah.
Who's kind of in a rut and a rock and a hard place between the greatest actress of all time, Michelle Yeoh.
She's in a comeback king,
Ki Hui Kwan.
Yeah.
And she's sort of this newcomer that isn't known in either way as a newcomer or a veteran.
And she's asked to do a lot.
She's kind of the only reason I stayed with the movie in the back half.
Yeah.
Because I think she really held on while of this struggling child.
If you can get invested in her character, that is like the toehold into the movie, I think. And that, like I said, worked really well for me. I was like a sobbing mess at the end of this movie. I also agree that the rock scenes are like a really, really nice way to, for me, even though I was loving all of the high energy, like cut, 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 crazy, 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 to have those moments of quiet and catch your breath and those sorts of exchanges, I thought were extremely necessary. I haven't watched this again yet, and I really need to. I don't know why I haven't, actually. I really, really, really want to rewatch this, and who knows, maybe after sort of the, like, I saw it opening weekend in the theater, so maybe, like, watching it at home with some distance, maybe I won't be sort of as blown away by it as I was. But man, yeah, I really liked
it. And I think I mentioned this to you when you're talking about sort of like the jumping all over the place, but I don't think I like multiverse stories. I think that is something that I've come to realize. It's just,
yeah,
I feel ungrounded in a way I don't enjoy it compared to a lot of people I know that do enjoy.
I have learned because we've just been hit That's with so a barrage many. Of them. So I guess lucky for me that I've learned that I do seem to enjoy them because I haven't had much of a choice in the matter over the past few years or past couple years of consuming content. But yeah, I did. Like, I can just still picture so many visuals from this movie and so many moments from it in my mind. But yeah, I'm glad you didn't hate it. And I think considering how you felt about Swiss Army Man, like, you know, you could have hated it. So that's something. But yeah, so where did it end up for you? Did it end up with a thumbs up or where did we
land?
Yeah,
it'll be thumbs up. Two and a half, though.
All right, fair enough.
I will say, interestingly, I don't like Swiss Army Man, but also in that movie, I think the performances are quite good.
True, yeah.
So they might be really good actor directors, in my opinion, but I just I cannot kind of really connect with them visually. And talking about actors, I have one more. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get a huge role in the movie, but I'm so glad we still have James Hong.
Oh, James Hong! Yeah. Knock on wood, I don't think I'm just like inventing this. I think he also has a small part in Turning Red as well. I think he's one of the voices in Turning Red. I don't think that's a thing. I don't think I'm just like, this movie has Chinese actors in it, so James Hong must be there. But I think he is. So I'm. I saw some interview with him this past year where he basically is like, no, I want to still be working. I love doing this. I'm going to keep it going. Like,
he's in his 80s.
Yep. Yeah.
And he's still doing it.
He's really, and he's really good in his small part in Everything Everywhere All at Once. So, yeah, it's a 4-star for me. It's actually my only 5-star movie of the year on Letterboxd. I have a handful of 4.5, so we're going to talk about a couple of them coming up. But I
think the end of the slate is more consistently great for us here.
Yes. Yeah, we're about to get into some good stuff, and we're actually going to transition now into talking
into
about
something
another
could
movie
be good
another movie like, that throws stuff in your face for an extended period of time and tells you to eat it, and that movie is Michael Bay's Ambulance. You just watched this, right? Or did you watch it a while ago?
A couple days ago.
All right. I dug it. What'd you think about Ambulance?
I don't know, that's my best description.
It is hard to talk about. Like, it's not... It has to be experienced, I think.
yes,
more than
and like,
describe.
I really thought, and I'm going to just spoil the hell out of this, but I thought it was about an ambulance trying to like escape a bank robbery, and then multi-international cartels come in. And,
oh no, it's about a hijacked
bomb plots.
Ambulance. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's like, but...
Yeah.
The movie starts off the rails and then ends up somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, this movie is a wild ride. It is like Michael Bay just fully like off the rails, off the chain, just, and you know, I am not like, I don't think I'd call myself a Michael Bay fan. I think I've probably disliked more of his movies than I've liked, but man, when he does his thing, like,
to me,
no
I
one's doing it like
he's
him.
He's not in either Transformers
Ugh,
mode,
yeah,
or in Oscars mode,
yeah,
where
agreed.
Like Pearl Harbor, even like The Island was supposed to kind of be this.
I kind of like The Island. kind of like The Island.
I saw it when I was a teen. I was like, okay.
I saw that in college, and I was like, you know who's hot? Ewan McGregor in The Island.
Yeah. I can't really disagree with that, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I was in college when that came out. Yeah, I'm looking at this. I've apparently seen, you know, a good chunk of his movies. I've seen most, the vast majority of his movies that are not Transformers movies.
That is like, probably half his movies, though.
It is. He's only directed 16 movies.
And...
That feels fake to me, but...
Five are Transformers movies, and then there's Pearl Harbor, which I think is utter trash.
Yeah, but Ambulance, Armageddon, Bad Boys, The Rock, Pain and Gain as
good.
A masterpiece.
Pain and Gain is sneakily, like, one of the best American movies in the last 20 years.
It's absolutely one of the best movies, one of the best American movies about America in the past 20 years.
Don't know how Tony Shalhoub didn't get an Oscar nomination for Pain and Gain.
Him in that movie.
I still love that line where he's like, you know who eats salad? Poor people.
Oh my God.
I'm going to fucking feed.
Jesus Christ, Pain and Gain is a wild movie. But I, so like looking at this, I'm like, I love The Rock. I love Pain and Gain. I have complicated feelings about Armageddon. I think The Island is fun, and I think Ambulance is right up there with it. It's absolutely insane. It's a hilarious LA movie. Like, it's actually not bad, like, LA geography in terms of the ambulance and where it's driving around.
I was very curious to ask you about
it's
that.
It's actually okay. It more or less, they're going in a lot of circles, but what you gonna do? This is from my Letterboxd review, but there's a very relatable sequence in which they get stuck in the parking garage of the LA Convention Center, which is a very difficult parking garage to navigate your way out of. And it's right in the middle of downtown underneath a bunch of convergence of freeways. So, yeah. Also, I think Yahya Abdul-Mateen just frickin' rules. Like, I think he's really, really fantastic.
I think he's very good. I think Gyllenhaal's a blast. Cassie made a good point when we watched it where I don't think the movie does enough to sort of set up the characters enough to like care what's going on. Which I do think is something that... You think so?
I mean, I think as much as a Michael Bay movie can. Like,
the
I cared
I think
about him
that works
him
with like Pain
money.
And Gain is I think it really develops the character well throughout the
that's
movie.
That's his most character-driven movie, 100%. No doubt. Yeah.
The thing is he goes to his brother for a loan. He has no idea even there's going to be a bank robbery that day. And like he just sort of joins it with a psycho. And
the,
at that
the way
point,
that they're just like, "Oh, we're on our way out to the big bank robbery. Here, let me throw you this gun. Hop on in. Let's
and
go."
And it just there's this little disconnect that I think it doesn't like cuz like after that
you,
there's no
you have to right. It's that is absolutely a little bit of a sticking point and you kind of just have to like burp, over it and then follow because you're right that the it also like as the movie continues on
see,
and you're
now
like
I wish I could screenshot the face you just made.
I know and I'm not recording video for this as the but like I keep like putting my hands to my eyes like I'm trying to parse the deep intricacies of Ambulance but it's just also funny because like his motivation which is like to get the money for like his wife's medical bills like by the time, from the instant the bank robbery goes wrong, it's like, buddy, you're done. Like, why are you continuing on with this, the rest of the plot of this movie? Like, what you tried to
do. Because brothers.
Because brothers. Also, shout out to my dude, Garrett Dillahunt, the law enforcement officer. I can't remember if he's like FBI or LAPD.
He's
like, who's decked out head to toe USC
and I was
gear.
Like,
just
I don't...
like following them around the whole time.
He's got a massive dog.
He's got a huge dog. He's got Trojans gear. He's got a huge dog. He's like not that stressed about this. He's just kind of like, well, here we go.
He's one of those guys. He came on screen. I was like, oh man, I know him from something. I looked at all those movies. I was like, oh yeah, I remember him from all those movies. Do I remember the character he played? Not really.
But his face is like, yeah. I mean, right? Like you look up the movies he's known for, and it's literally No Country for Old Men, 12 Years a Slave, Looper, Widows, Assassination of Jesse James, like et cetera, et cetera. People, if they were Deadwood watchers, will know him best from the television show Deadwood.
Oh, is he a big character in Deadwood?
He plays two different characters in Deadwood. He plays a character in the first season who dies pretty early, and they liked him so much that they brought him back in the second season just as a completely different character.
That's pretty funny.
One of the most evil characters I've ever seen on a TV show, too. He is...
Oh, I didn't know Anna Gunn was in Deadwood.
Oh, yeah. Deadwood rules, man. Should watch that sometime.
At some point.
I realize, like, life is too short to watch... I mean, you haven't seen, like, The Sopranos either, right? Like,
yeah, that's the first thing that I'd have to
Deadwood
watch.
Deadwood is shorter, for what it's worth, than The Sopranos. It ran, like, half as long. But also, I think Isa Gonzalez is pretty good in this.
Yeah, she was fine.
Yeah, she's fun. She's like, the paramedic in the ambulance that they take hostage. Like, there's no point in really kind of getting into the anything beyond bank robbery goes wrong, they take an ambulance hostage. This movie has the most deranged drone photography.
I was just about to ask what you thought about the drone photography.
Oh my god, I loved it. Because the thing is,
I screamed at almost everyone.
I kind of wish I'd seen it in the theater, and I'm also kind of glad I didn't.
I think I've gotten motion sick.
I'm not one of those people who are like, oh, I got motion sick in the theater, but this movie would have tested my limits. I really, really... I'm tired of the over-reliance on drone photography that has no purpose. Let's just do this instead of a crane shot or a helicopter shot, or let's just, the fact that we have a drone, let's do a big overhead shot that has
that's like establishing shots and boring.
I can't stand it. And I started noticing a couple of years ago, because, you know, I like to most years try to watch all of the Oscar-nominated short films. And like when drone technology got very cheap, like about 5 years ago or so, all of a sudden every live action short had just like tons of drone shots in it. I'm like, well, because those are so cheap now, and I get it, but if it doesn't have a purpose to the story you're telling, why are you just showing me a big overhead shot of your setup here? This movie makes drones do things that I didn't know drones could do. They just do like twists and somersaults down the side of buildings and across freeways and around characters, and he really went for it.
Yeah. There's a list of four of the last five movies, and I guess you could probably put Thing Everywhere All at Once into this, but it really came up with Maverick and Nope for me, where it's like there's directors that are really trying to rebel against sort of a Marvel studio based system and providing investigating spectacle in a way that they haven't before.
Yes.
Bay didn't have a big budget for Ambulance. It is a pretty cheap movie as far as a Bay
movie
goes. Which
is good, because it didn't make any money. Oof, this was a disappointing release, yeah.
But he's able to be like, look at what we have for cheap, and look at what we can do with it. You know? Mm-hmm. He's really pushing the spectacle to its limit, and I think there's sort of this idea of like, what can we do visually?
Yeah.
Sort of push narrative and characters and stuff in ways that we haven't done before, even though we have more resources than we have before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really pulls it off.
I agree. I definitely recommend it. I will say, I'll back up. I didn't say Everything Everywhere All at Once is not free streaming anywhere, although it's rentable digitally on iTunes and Amazon. Ambulance is on Peacock, if you have Peacock. Otherwise, it's also rentable in all of the usual places. And this is a movie that I watched at home and had a great time with. Like, I had no problem watching this at home. And sort of being carried away by the sort of intense action of the story. So I do, yeah, I recommend Ambulance. It was a fun time.
Thumbs up?
Thumbs up, yeah, absolutely.
Out of 4?
Oh, 3.
3.
Yeah, a nice 3. We're having a lot of 3 out of 4s today. All right.
Now for the movie neither of us finished.
Yes. All right. So Dylan and I jointly have a confession to make, which is that neither of us finished RRRR due to, I'm not going to accuse you of poor time management. I'll accuse myself of poor time management.
I think I didn't manage my time well because this was what I wanted to watch with Cassia, and I had a lot of family in town. I went to a wedding out of state, and I kept on thinking like, oh, I'll get to it. And
yeah, and it's 3 hours long, and so for people who aren't familiar, Dylan, can you pronounce for me the name of the director of RRR?
S.S. Rajamouli, I believe it is.
And so this film is 3 hours long, and it is not in English. If you stream it on Netflix, it is a Hindi dub. I believe it was originally filmed in the Tamil language. Regardless, you know, at least for me, when, like, you can't put that on the background. It's not like, a lot of these movies, if I didn't finish, and I wouldn't want to do that for RRR, I would want to devote my full attention to it, but it's like, it's not ending, I can't look away from the screen. I need to be, you know, and so I'm like, I really am going to find the time to sit down, and I did, and I watched the first 2/3 of it, and then it got to be very late at night, and I was like, I'll finish the last part, and then I didn't. But I will. And I frankly want to go back and try to rewatch it all in one sort of go together. But what were your impressions from as much as you did say?
Holy shit.
It's a wild ride.
Talking again about spectacle, I feel like this is Rajamouli coming in here and saying, look, y'all been dicking around in Hollywood for a bit. Let me take over.
And so I will say, if anyone has ever heard of this director before, it might be if you've heard of the Bahubali films.
Or Iga.
Yeah. Iga's the bug one?
Yes.
Okay. Bahubali I have heard of previously as, and similar to RRR was sort of like, this is a have to see it to believe it spectacle kind of situation. And I think it's also been on Netflix as well. And then it's one of those things where just, this is the one that crossed over, that got enough of a buzz, that convinced, you know, distributors to put it in theaters, and it had sort of this like massive crossover breakout hit. It's a lot of fun. It's about these two guys in colonial India, sort of pre-revolution India. One is a like revolutionary guy, the other one is like a sort of member of the military forces working under the British colonial government, but then circumstances happen that sort of bring them together, and they have this friendship, but they also, you know, don't tell each other everything, and you know, there's some romance going on, there's animals and there's dance sequences, and yeah, it's just, it's a blast, but it is a 3-hour and 2-minute long movie that is not in English, and so I totally get why, you know, at least that's why I have not had a chance to finish it yet. I was saying, I think before we recorded, man, I just wish I'd gotten to it in the theater. And I will say, it was actually hard to do, because they were having all of these, like, one-at-a-time screenings that were selling out all over the place. Or they would be on, like, a Tuesday night at 9 p.m. across town. So I wish I'd had the opportunity to take part in that. Nick is going to be so mad if he ever listens to this. Nick is a huge RRR fan. He loves it.
He's a huge Rajamouli fan.
He's a huge Rajamouli fan. I'm sure we'll be talking about this movie later.
It might be best that we'll talk about it probably later with Nick.
Yeah.
So.
So, yeah, we will. We will circle back. But
I do have a quick question for you. Yes. And this is something we'll probably get to with Nick. Which one of us is Rise and Roar and Revolt?
That is a great question. I don't know. What do you think?
Think about it.
I have no idea.
Something to think about. All right, well, we'll keep that. That's true. If there are three of anything, we have to figure out who's what. So we'll keep
I did want to also say that Kasi agreed with me that my guy was the hot one and not the other one. So
I'm not saying that that dude is not handsome. He's a handsome dude. The other one just looks like a frickin' male model. I will say, and I know Nick said that Nelly backed him up. Matt also backed me up. And I'm like, hey, in RRR, there's a hot one, right? And he was like, yeah, the guy in the military, the hot one. Like, categorically. I was like, thank you. But which, again,
I got one. I got one backup with
not me. To say that they're not both hot. But just the one dude. I'm looking at the Letterboxd header picture right now. What a pair of buds.
You're just so transfixed.
I am.
That scene was great, though, where it's like they rescue the boy from like the exploding train, uh-huh. and then they're just like, let's go
this,
run past
this movie
trains.
This has a friendship montage that is like very
greatest
special.
Greatest montage.
It's like just a montage of friendship, which I think more movies should have. But we'll circle back on RRR, I'm sure, later in the year or early next year in award season. All right. You ready to talk Maverick?
I'm playing the music right now.
Okay. Maverick. What a picture. What's there to say? Everyone's seen Maverick, right? I think everyone on the planet has
seen Maverick. This is the opposite of Everything Everywhere All at Once, where I was like, you know, I've heard a lot of just a lot of everything about the movie. The hype, the retroactive hype against the movie. Like
you've heard the hype, the backlash to the backlash.
Backlash. And I was like, all right, let's just sit down. Let's do this. As you know, I like Top Gun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happened to be my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah.
And I was just like, fuck, I'm witnessing perfection.
See now, this is the energy I needed when we did our Top Gun episode with friend of the podcast, Steven.
We love you, Steven, but what in the fuck?
And I had no backup. It was me alone. And which isn't to say that I totally heard.
I think Steven brings up good points. But I will counter those points with, did you see the opening scene where he hits Mach 10? And he blows everything off the ground when he takes off besides Ed Harris standing like a badass. I was like, oh my God.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, Steven brought up some really great points. But did you see that scene where Jennifer Connelly is like steering a sailboat? Because that happens in this movie also. And so there has been much said and much written about later stage Tom Cruise's career, where unlike many other male actors and especially action stars of the past couple decades, I mean, he obviously has a massive ego. Like, it's Tom Cruise. Like, he has a massive ego. He's, you know, gonna be
the biggest
today.
Egomaniac project I've ever seen.
But he, throughout almost all of his movies that he's made in the past couple decades, he has no problem like sharing the screen with women who can sort of put him in his place, whether it's, you know, someone like
men that will put him in his place.
Or men. But you think of something like Edge of Tomorrow with like Emily Blunt, where it's like she is the strong, capable one and he's just keeping up. Oh gosh, now I'm blanking. Oh yeah, you know, Rebecca Ferguson in the Mission Impossible movies. And even Jennifer Connelly in this, she's not a fighter pilot, but they have that extended scene where like he doesn't know what to do on a sailboat and he's like getting knocked around and she has to like yell at him and he has to like follow and he's laughing and she's laughing. I'm just like, this is a scene that doesn't have to be in this movie, but it is, and it makes me so happy.
I remember Steven mentioning like that he didn't like that it wasn't like a high school comedy, like mm-hmm. Top Gun one wasn't.
Or a college comedy, more like Top
college
Gun
comedy,
is,
yeah.
Because it is interesting how they changed.
It's much
that.
More focused.
Yeah.
This isn't as much of a legacy sequel as I expected.
Correct. Yeah. It's
there's still references, but like
absolutely. But it is interesting the choice they made to have it be set at Top Gun, but it's not. It's not just he's the instructor now and they're all competing for Top Gun. It's set there, but they're bringing back graduates who are just qualified for a special mission. So it's doing something different.
Yeah.
But
I like. But I thought there was a lot of great moments of just like characters bonding in different ways than being in a college comedy, which was like the sailboat scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And
great balls of fire.
I loved every scene in that bar. I liked him having to buy rounds and getting thrown out because he couldn't follow the rules of the bar. Like,
that was beautiful.
It's so... You know what? When we're done here, I'm going to go put it on. I already bought it on iTunes, and so that's what I'm going to do when we're done, is go put Maverick back on, because...
I will say, I heard a lot of negative stuff about the Lady Gaga song. I'm not thinking this is the best Lady Gaga song of all time, but at the end, I was like the tear down the face, and the Lady Gaga song hits, and I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah, I think it's pretty effective. Yeah, can't wait to see her sing it at the Oscars next year. That'll be fun. I hope they fly her in somehow and have her like come in via the air and just sing her song. It could have been such a disaster, this movie. And it's so funny because it was put off, like, one, they were trying to make it. I mean, they were trying to make it for so long that they were trying to make it with Tony Scott, like, before he passed.
That's crazy.
And so then he died. That obviously put the development on a different track. And then it was in development for so long. And then they finally were making it pre-COVID, and then it was supposed to come out in like 2019, and then it had all these delays, and then the COVID delays, and so by the time we finally saw it, it was basically fully 3 years delayed
since the trailer.
Yes. And I think there was just, usually when a movie is delayed that long, you're like, oh god, like, what are they trying to fix or what are they doing? But no, it is just Tom Cruise was, you know, it sounds like it is just what he said, which is, I'm not going to put it in theaters until people can go to theaters and see it. And god damn it, if that maniac didn't pull it off, like, biggest hit of the year. Like, I mean, we'll see when Wakanda Forever comes out, but it could stay, you know, depending on.
I think it will.
I don't know, man. We'll see about, it's going to be a weird end of the year. But it's going to be hard to beat. And it had a box office run basically not seen, like, since Titanic. Like, its box office hauls in weeks 7, 8, 9 were just still up there, like, it just wasn't dropping off. So what a movie. And I think I've told you that, like, I have, like, almost everywhere I've been out and about over the past couple of months, I've heard somebody talking about it, like, at a restaurant, at a shopping center, someone walking by, someone sitting by me just being like, well, and then, you know, when Tom Cruise, and it's like, not a lot of movies permeate the culture like that anymore.
No. It does remind me of the Batman, though, where it's like there's a big set piece, but then it just keeps going on. But I kind of like the way this one keeps going on, because it sort of like breaks the set piece and rebuilds in really interesting character ways. And I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but
you know, I don't want to talk about that.
You told me not to think.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
Talk
final,
to me, Dad.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that final sort of the final moment, just because you talked about how we all talked about how much it caught us off guard, and I don't think we have to talk about it to get into the movie. But it does a really good job of, and this is something that I think a lot of good big action movies can do, where it so strongly focuses your attention on, you don't spend the movie sort of with your mind wandering or like wondering, well, what happened here, or like, what about this part? Like, you're so invested in what's happening that you're able to get caught off guard because you forgot about this other plot point or this other character or this other thing. And it can, like, you can have surprises that aren't twists at all, but just that you're like, oh, I was so locked in to this like tense moment on the screen that things can still take you by surprise.
A couple actors I want to talk about from the movie real quick. Bashir Salahuddin, who is not someone I was really that familiar with, though I guess he's in Marriage Story at one point.
Oh.
But he plays sort of like the guy that is like Cruise's right-hand man at Top Gun, and then sort of just like right-hand man at his base, and then sort of follows him to Top Gun.
Okay.
I thought he was great.
I thought there were a lot of really good supporting actors in this movie. That guy was great.
I liked all the new crew, which I expected.
What do I know him? Oh, okay, you're
He's
right,
in
yeah.
Cyrano.
Oh, Cyrano and A Simple Favor and Marriage Story. Okay, yes, yeah. One of those guys where it's just like, oh, he's in a bunch of movies that I've really loved in the past few years.
Yeah.
He was great. As Hondo, he's so good.
I'm so glad a character like Hondo is in this one.
Yeah.
Like, again, just a lot. He had, what a weird character to have as, like, Tom Cruise is like, this is going to be my right-hand man. And it's just some, like, like mechanic dude who just kind of like pals around, and he's like playing beach football with them. Mm-hmm. Love it. What a guy.
Yep.
But the Val Kilmer scene.
Yeah. So Val Kilmer's in this movie, which again, something I don't want to sort of like get into the details of, just because I didn't know. I sort of knew he was going to be in it, but I wasn't sure what that was going to mean, because I think most people are probably aware, but Val Kilmer had was his cancer in his laryngitis or some sort of throat cancer. I don't know if it was esophageal or laryngeal or what have you, but he had some sort of throat cancer, basically lost his vocal cords a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And there was that movie Val from late last year, I think, that was about him and is narrated sort of in his own words, but by his son, because Val Kilmer himself can't really speak anymore. And he sort of has been, you know, dealing with his cancer for quite some time now. But he shows up in this movie in a way that I sort of wasn't expecting, and in a way that really, I don't know, built on, I would not have thought of sort of like the, not the mythology of the original Top Gun, but sort of like, it really made it feel more connected to the original Top Gun than I was expecting it to do. It's really lovely and very surprising and very moving. And, you know, this may be the last time we see Val Kilmer on screen. And I thought it was really, really wonderful, and I'm really happy he was in it.
Me too.
He was excellent.
So, thumbs down?
Also, shout out Glenn Powell, who rules, my beloved Glenn Powell. Just there to be handsome and smile and flash his big, shiny white teeth and be hot. And
have a toothpick in his, a little toothpick in his mouth all the time.
So, just, Glenn Powell, what a treasure. Yeah, thumbs up, I'd say.
Out of four?
Oh, four.
Yeah, go four.
Yeah, I give it technically 4.5 out of 5, but that's I round that
me
up.
Too.
It's a 4 out of 4 stars for me.
All right, gotcha.
So let's,
what in the fuck?
Let's dial it back a notch before we finish big. And let's what talk the fuck? About the David Cronenberg film Crimes of the Future.
So I think I've said my point on it.
What the fuck? So this is the newest film from David Cronenberg. It stars Viggo Mortensen and Lea Seydoux and Kristen Stewart and Scott Speedman.
Scott Speedman comes in this movie and is just like, I'm going to take like every shot from like half court.
Well, dude, I was just, again, speaking of people I'm just happy to see in movies, like I was just so happy to see him in this movie. So this probably needs a little bit more. I mean, we didn't even describe the plot of Maverick, but it's Maverick. Crimes of the Future is, speaking of sort of near-ish future sci-fi. So this is like a sort of a near-ish future sci-fi horror David Cronenberg thing, about where human evolution is progressing in such a way that like human bodies are doing weird things. It's a David Cronenberg movie and human bodies are doing weird things. And in this one, they're doing all kinds of things. They're growing additional organs. They're like
cutting their faces.
Body modification, changing the way digestion works. Like, basically, Viggo Mortensen is a guy whose body just keeps generating new organs, and then he basically does performance art with Lea Seydoux, who, like, they extract the organs from him in front of an audience, and that's, like, performance art? And if that, like, based on that description, you know whether you want to see this movie or not. If I said that and that sounds just gross and unpleasant and not that interesting, please feel free to move right along. If you're intrigued,
it's worse. Check it out. If that's what you think is gross, it gets worse.
That exactly.
There's a beautiful line that Kristen Stewart's character says at one point where she says, "How can a tumorous growth be art?" And I think that's this movie in a nutshell.
I cannot wait to give all of my supporting actress points to Kristen Stewart. when we...
She's so good in this movie.
She makes a choice. And apparently, like, that was her choice. She made, like... If and when you watch this movie, you'll hear how Kristen Stewart speaks in it. And apparently she went to David Cronenberg and was like, here's what I'm thinking for this character. And he was like, cool, do it. And
it's wild. The scene where she quote-unquote seduces Viggo, she's acting in a way I've never seen an actor act before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely. Weird. I think that's true. Also, speaking of movies that I texted you in the middle of, this movie... was in the middle of a very tense sequence when all of a sudden this sort of blaring, like, noise started. We were sure it was part of the movie until a theater employee came in and said, guys, that's an alarm and you all need to step out of the theater. And so I had to evacuate. And the theater employee immediately was like, someone went out an emergency exit. Like, it's fine. We also have to wait. And so a real sort of 40X throw you off your... balance experience, sure, of this movie, where I had to stop for 10 minutes in the middle, go into the hallway, come back. I will say, got a pair of rain checks for free tickets because that happened, which I then used to see Bodies, Bodies, Bodies for free. So worked out well for me. But yeah, this movie is strange. Maybe the wildest ending beautiful. I've seen all year.
I don't know. Yeah, it is.
Speaking of images that live in my brain, like the ending of this movie. The final shot of this movie is unbelievable. Like, it's... I mean, Viggo Mortensen's doing a thing, too. Yeah, and so, I don't know...
I heard someone compare this to Bride of Frankenstein, and that is maybe the best comparison I think you could give.
I love that.
An ending that is so tragic and beautiful and... Yeah. Conflicting, yeah, in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Very conflicting. I think it leaves you very conflicted. Like I said, Viggo Mortensen also in this. I think all the performances are great. As I think we did definitely talk about on the podcast at some point, I watched like 8 David Cronenberg movies going into seeing this because I hadn't seen any besides The Fly. And so I watched a ton more of his movies. And I'm glad I did. I will say, not that I didn't know what his deal was, I did, but I do think it helped to have seen, for example, Crash or The Brood.
Crash is maybe the most similar movie.
I think Crash.
Crash or Videodrome?
Crash and Videodrome, I think, yeah. Those are, if someone asked me, like, what two should I watch, I would say Crash and Videodrome. Although, both The Brood and Existenz have...
Two movies I haven't seen, so.
Both, They just have similar sort of like the human body and weird shit it can do, you know, like all 4 of those movies, if you don't mind scenes of people basically reaching into their own bodies and pulling out weird stuff, you know, that's what you're going to get.
Giving people oral sex through their belly buttons.
Yeah. There's like that weird device too. There's like an eye thing. Again, if you like David Cronenberg movies or you're even, like, Cronenberg curious, I do think this is an interesting movie, but it's a weird one.
Loved it.
But I had a really great time with it. And it's another one that I'm assuming it'll hit something streaming-ish. I mean, it's, like, rentable right now. And same thing, Maverick, available for purchase. And I think maybe premium rental, but definitely available for purchase. Crimes, available for... rent and purchase as well. And yeah, a targeted recommend if this is something that people think they would be interested in.
Thumbs up.
So yeah, thumbs up, absolutely.
Out of 4.
Like a high 3 for me. Maybe a high 3, low 3.5. I have reservations. It's sort of mid Cronenberg for me, but that's still...
It took a minute for me to get into this movie.
Yes, that
too. But the ending was something that was like, oh, that is
also
beautiful.
It takes a minute to get into this movie because the beginning is also extremely upsetting. Also, trigger warning, child murder. Just trigger
really
warning.
Brutal, intense child
very
murder.
Brutal right at the very beginning, upsetting. Someone murders a child. So just I have plenty of friends for whom that is a automatic nope out of a movie, and so if that's the case for you, by all means avoid.
Speaking about nope
speaking
out.
Speaking of
but...
noping out, are we going to transition to our final movie of the show?
Nope.
Nope, nope, nope.
Yes, but...
Let's talk nope. Yes and nope. All right. So Nope is another movie that I get the sense that people are aware of and have probably seen if they want to see it.
Hopefully.
We can save sort of spoilery talk for the end. I don't think... There's really nothing else we need to circle back to that's spoilery about the other movies.
Yeah, this would be the main thing, though.
But yeah, so we can...
Spoilers.
When we want to say anything spoilery, if people haven't seen Nope yet, we can make a note of that. But... Yeah, nope, good movie.
Holy fuck, it's my favorite movie.
So I know this is your favorite
years.
Movie of the year.
In years.
Wow.
I think this is my favorite, what would it be, like a non-indie movie since Little Women.
Okay. Yeah, this is, it's at my, I have it at number two, although my, I don't know. My top 10's a mess. This is a weird movie year. I don't know. I've seen, as of today, 31 movies that came out this year. And I don't know, man. I like the vast majority of them, but I still feel like I need something to kick it to the next level. But Nope, I mean, Nope is going to be up there at the top for me with Maverick and Everything Everywhere All at Once and a couple movies that we haven't talked about today. Nope's up there. Third film from Jordan Peele. Speaking of a lot of sci-fi-ish movies on the list, this is like a sci-fi horror. Definitely a movie that if you haven't seen it and you think you want to see it, just stop listening now.
Yeah, you want to just, because it's the end of the podcast anyway.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. I'll just say it's the highest of recommendations from both of us. I guess sort of my one... Think if you have like one main non-spoilery thought, and I'll share my one non-spoilery thought, which is there's been a lot of discourse about like whether or not it's a horror movie. I think it absolutely is. I think it has, you know, horror elements, but at the same time, it's maybe to me the least overall like scary of us. Maybe it's to me Us is his scariest movie, and then this and Get Out.
This movie, there's like
I mean, there are some
there's
images.
Moments that shock me beyond belief. But I, as a whole, like Alex was like, that's more of an adventure movie. We made a good point that it's like it's almost like Raiders of the Lost Ark, where there's a couple of moments where it's like, what in the fuck are you talking about? But it's kind of just a romp, most of it.
A few years ago on an old episode of Screen Drafts, they did a Screen Drafts list of horror prequels. And somebody tried to play Temple of Doom. Uh-huh. On the list as a horror prequel, and I think it got kicked off as not meeting
because
their
of horror or prequel
for not being horror enough. But
see, I would have counted that.
Right, I was going to say, but to me, I think Nope is around. I think to me, that's a good
Temple of Doom is a
Temple
pretty
of
good.
Doom is a good sort of It's definitely Temple of Doom definitely a prequel.
Speaking of Indiana Jones, though, did you realize that the woman in RRR that has the kid
is the Nazi? 100%
is the Nazi from Last Crusade.
Last Crusade,
I didn't realize that until after it was like.
And then the guy in it is also like a famous British actor. So there's a couple of famous British folks in there. But I think Temple of Doom is sort of a good thing for Nope, where it's like both movies that are adventure genre pictures that have straight up moments of horror. Like there is a moment or a sequence in Nope that is sort of on
there's two for me and they're back to back
but there's a sort of extended sequence, let's say, in Nope that is sort of up there with like Temple of Doom ripping the heart out, like unabashed sort of horror sequence. So I guess what I would just say is Nope is great, people should see it. I consider it a horror movie, but it's also not like Us freaked me out in the theater so bad that I like wasn't sure I was gonna make it. I was like literally just sort of sinking in my chair, being like, I don't want to be here. This is so scary.
Me too.
Nope's not like that. It has some gorgeous images, and it's can be very intense and unsettling. But even my non-horror friends, I would absolutely recommend it to. And Daniel Kaluuya, man, when don't you just want to watch Daniel Kaluuya on screen, like?
Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, and Steven Yeun just are insanely good in this movie.
100%. Kiki Palmer, like, what a friggin' star. Just Unbelievable.
Did you ever see Aquila and the Bee?
No. I bet I'd like
That's like one of my childhood movies. So it's always very funny that she like is a...
It came out like 10 years ago, didn't it? How old is that movie?
Aquila and the Bee came out 16 years ago.
Okay. All right. I'll allow it. My favorite Keke Palmer is in Hustlers.
She's so good in Hustlers.
It's okay, Gary. We love you, Gary. She's just... Holy shit, she rules in that movie. But Daniel Kaluuya, for me, I think is my favorite actor to watch think on screen. Like, yes. In terms of, like, looking at somebody and they can just be on screen and they're thinking, and I'm just captivated by watching him while he's silently formulating a plan or thinking. And whether he's a good guy or a bad guy, like, it's so captivating.
There's the scene where... Okay, now we're going to get into spoilers.
Oh, yeah. By the way, so if you haven't seen Nope yet, go watch Nope. Please do. Recommend
it. Don't listen to everyone.
In a couple weeks, we'll be back with a regular episode. And we are now... Nope spoilers. Nope, nope, nope. Okay.
So there's a scene when he realizes that the alien is actually... The alien ship is actually just a creature.
Yeah, that is the big spoiler. Put like a gigantic spoiler warning, because that is the big spoiler of Nope, by the way. Like that, to the extent there's a twist, that's the twist, right?
Never seen anything like that happen.
That it's not a spaceship. Movie. It's an alien itself.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Couldn't have called it.
Is it an alien? Don't know.
Well, it's a creature. Did it come from the ocean? Did it come from outer space? We don't know. It's not a UFO. What are
it's
they?
It's a. I don't remember what.
Like
you
a
call
UA
it.
Something like an
UAB.
Yeah, like a unidentified airborne something. UAC. They have a whole thing about how it's not a UFO.
But he realizes it's not a ship. Mm-hmm. It's eating people. And he's trying to drive back home from it. And it's basically, it like takes out his power on his car. And he's trying to figure out what's going on. And then the horse thing crashes through his windshield.
Oh my God.
And just,
the horse statue or figurine or whatever it is. Yeah.
And he just starts like being like, no, no, no.
So now, for better or worse, now that Nope is on digital, I'm starting to see like clips from it being posted online.
Yeah.
And this happens. I can't remember what movie this just happened. Oh, with Elvis, which I haven't seen yet. But I'm now more excited about seeing Elvis. So by the way, if people are wondering why we didn't talk about like
Elvis from the clips.
We just haven't seen it. But the clips I've seen from Elvis make me really
They're quite good.
He's what? He's what? But someone posted just the clip of sort of the beginning of the big finale action sequence, like when Keke Palmer's in the house and the cinematographer and Angel are outside and they're filming, and then Daniel Kaluuya takes off on the horse.
Like, and the camera goes down.
Thing swoops down, and then he puts
That was the greatest moment in movie history.
It's just hooting, hollering. Like, not to steal Nick's bit, but just like all of
Michael Abel's score kicks in, and it's like a classic Western infused with like a sort of a sci-fi action thriller sound.
Yeah.
It's my favorite moment.
I think there's so much. I mean, we've been going for a little while already, and we can't do like an entire Nope cast, because this is a movie that you could talk about for hours and hours and hours.
The sad thing is I keep seeing people say like Nope's a better movie to talk about than watch, and
I don't think that's true.
I
think it's both.
It's great to talk about,
so,
it's great to watch,
to
it's
me,
a perfect movie.
Movies, I have to try to think of an example. To me, a movie that I would describe as better to talk about than watch is like something that's really unpleasant to watch. That like
Audition.
Believe it or not, I've never seen Audition.
Oh.
So I know what Audition's about. I am spoiled for Audition. But Audition 1 sort of had its heyday before I fully leaned into horror, Jana.
Sure.
And also, even now, it sounds pretty upsetting. Even now, I'm not like rushing
it's
out.
Great.
I'm not rushing out to catch that one, although I will eventually. I haven't seen any. That's Takashi Miike, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of his films. But that, yes, knowing like what Audition's about, something like that, or like, I don't know. I can't think of another particularly great example right now, but like Nope is so fun to watch. I was captivated.
That's what Alex said when he came out of the theater. He's like, I was expecting like something like that was really intense, like Us or kind of.
Feel free to edit this out if I'm accidentally calling out somebody in particular. But like, somebody said it was boring. Do you remember we were talking about someone and they were like, Nope is boring?
I don't know.
Apologies if I'm calling out somebody who listens to this podcast and thought Nope was boring. But I just remember seeing that comment from somebody and feeling like.
Oh, it was Amanda Dobbins.
Oh, I was on the Big Pick. Okay, she can handle it. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't like one of our friends saying it was boring and I like called them out.
I know it's a bit of a long movie, but.
It didn't feel long.
God, no. Every scene was so exciting in a different way, either because it was funny, because it was emotional, because it was terrifying, because it was thrilling.
Yeah.
It was the
best. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I didn't feel long. I guess it's 2:10, but it didn't feel long to me at all.
No.
I was lucky enough to see it I saw it in fake IMAX, but I saw it on one of the, the biggest screen at the AMC that has like the IMAX proportions.
Sure.
It's not a true IMAX. There's actually surprisingly very few true IMAXs in LA. But I saw it at like a fake IMAX and it looked so good. I will say, quick tangent. Yesterday I saw 3,000 Years of Longing at the same theater, not on the same screen. I saw it at this other screen they have there that's like this Dolby enhanced digital screen, which was wild. Which was like, they had a whole pre-show about how like the blacks were blacker and like the noise was louder, and it was the kind of theater where the noise is so loud that you feel your seat shaking when it gets loud. The movies, man, I just love to be in a big loud theater where the screen is this big and the sound is so loud it shakes your seat. But yeah, I'm really, 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 really glad that we saw Nope on the biggest screen available to us. And I know I'm just full of hacky cliches today, but
it's like, so good.
Seeing it on the biggest screen available, and it looked so amazing. And like, with just this movie filled with just frickin' movie stars, like, down to having Keith David in a single scene performance, like, our dude,
yeah,
Keith
he
David.
Shows up in a couple flashbacks, but. Keith David's the best.
Oh my god. Like, genre king Keith David. Just like overall king Keith David. But like, I don't know. Having just recently seen They Live on a big F-off screen.
Oh my god.
Like,
maybe Keith David's best.
I think that's my favorite. I mean, I obviously, you know, The Thing. I get
He's
it.
He's great in The Thing.
But They Live for me is like, is what it's all about. But yeah, he's great in a tiny, basically flashback focused role. We haven't talked much about Steven Yeun. Do you want to just lay waste to the Gordy haters?
Y'all are crazy because that damn monkey is the best thematically, narratively important flashback in movie history. It's so good.
So you can look at Nope from like 18 different levels. I think the most surface level reading of Nope is that you can interpret it as being about how like Hollywood and the film industry chew people up and spit them out and don't appreciate them, and especially non-white people, and especially people that don't have like agency or sort of cachet to, you know, be at the top of the pyramid. And how you can, you know, basically, yeah, how just sort of that the film industry and Hollywood in general can, yeah, chew you up and spit you out and sort of like throw your life into a shambles. Like, to me, that's just a very sort of top line basic level reading of this movie.
My top line basic level movie is about how we as viewers consume Hollywood spectacle.
Oh, okay. So like,
and how it's either it doesn't have, you know, this movie is about the pilot and not the plane.
Right.
And I think a lot of Hollywood scandal has become it's about the plane and not the pilot.
Yeah. And I think either way, it's about how, whether it's
The UFO is literally like an eye in the sky.
Right.
Like it looks like an eye in the sky.
Sure. And, but also we get straight up sort of, I mean, the opening thesis statement monologue of the film that was like the trailer of the film is the whole story about the, like, not Maybridge, that's not the name, but the horse.
Haywood.
Not Haywood, the original photographer who shot the horse that was...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The guy whose name we know, as opposed to the writer whose name we don't. And they're saying that the writer is Haywood, and it's the great, 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 one more great grandfather, and, like, you know, and so we know that, like, this is this family who are these horse trainers, and, you know, they sort of have been, for as long as film's been around, they've had skin in the game. And to hear all of that and to be invested in this story about this family, and then to watch the Steven Yeun Gordy storyline and say, what does this mean? How does it fit? When it's a movie about a child actor who goes through a traumatic event with an animal that shouldn't have been on the set of a, you know, production to begin with, and that, like, destroyed everything around it, I just don't know how you don't put those
Well, and I, to
together.
Me, like, the Gordy part was more about, like, you know, how the spectacle, like... It, like, will consume and kill us.
Right, it,
in
it turns
some sort
on
of
you.
Way.
Like, it, yeah.
It turns on you. Exactly. And less as, like, you know, how it affected the actors, but, like, what we demand of the entertainment we consume and what that, the problems with that
are.
I
think it's a little bit about how it affected Steven Yeun and the choices he's made in his
100%,
life.
100%.
Especially once he's
letting the thing is, like,
tourists have sex
I start at that level. It's and I get down to that level a little bit later. I think it's interesting you start at the other level.
Yeah, sort of. And I think that is a credit to the film that you have. I think there's multiple entry points. That's why I was saying I shouldn't have said surface level at the beginning, but I think there's multiple entry points for you to sort of approach it and then work your way through its theme.
But every time the Gordy thing is so important to the story.
One of the most.
And also, best opening
things.
Shot ever, where we're just seeing this completely unknowable, something's happened, there's a shoe standing on its heel, and like, then the monkey is, that's got blood over his voice just sort of like turns and looks at us. Well, I was like, oh.
And so what's interesting is two of the most terrifying images from the trailer that everybody assumed were alien related, that actually were Gordy related, are the fist bump when he build up the fist when he goes under, and it's like a blood, and you can tell when you see it that it's a blood covered like chimp. But it looked like it could be an alien hand in the trailer. And then the face of the co-star when her veil blows up and she has what is unfortunately in context recognizable of, as the face of somebody who had their face torn off by a chimp or ape or what have you. But in the trailer, you're like, oh, that's like an undercover alien or something. And it's like, nope, that's a human who just had their face torn off. Like, yeah. No, that sequence, I don't know. Now I'm just thinking about the sequence at the ranch, the final sort of horse sacrifice sequence. Upsetting.
Yeah, but Lucky makes it through.
Lucky does, thank God.
There's a couple horses at the beginning that get taken.
Yeah.
But there's this horse that's like called Lucky that sort of sticks around through all of it. And the whole ending, you're just like waiting for this horse to get got.
Yeah.
And never does. Go unlucky.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of final shots, this movie's...
Well, I mean, I think a lot of this movie's also about, like, what we'll do for our shot, for our great cinematic shot.
The guy dies for it. Which I've also seen people being like, that doesn't make sense. Why would he do that? I'm like, because it's...
Did you, like, he's filming, like, these violent animals in the wild. He's like, I want the light
also,
in a certain direction.
I also think that is sort of... I feel like I need to be more generous. It's not really useful, I don't think, to just sort of be like, people are wrong about the how they're interpreting this movie. you're like, maybe they are.
I think it's just crazy to me.
I
just feel like they're being disingenuous.
Well,
they're not...
I think people sometimes look like it's a story. Like, it's not a documentary. This is not a real person. And yes, characters have to behave in ways that are understandable and relatable so that you don't sort of disengage with the movie. But like in films, especially genre films, especially horror, sci-fi, heightened films, characters will do extreme things. Would a guy in the real world hand crank that camera until he was eaten alive by a gigantic, unidentified creature? Who's to say? Does it make sense for that character in this world that the movie exists? I think it does.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just like, I don't know. Yeah. He wouldn't do that. I'm like, why wouldn't he? Everything we've seen, like, you know, and I've seen this sort of thing about, like, the angel character, the fries guy who gets sort of it. But to me, the 2-minute scene where we see that he's like obsessed with ancient aliens and like that sort of garbage nonsense explains exactly why he would do this. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if we're, you and I are just like railing against an invisible or a straw man.
No, it's definitely not a visible straw man. I'll tell you that much. I feel like I just keep running into it. I saw a tweet earlier today, literally just, nope is fine. Not as exciting, too slow, more fun to talk about than to watch.
I realize this is how it's, because this is how I curate my own, like, social media, but I'm looking at the Letterboxd page for Nope, which has, like, you know, the activity from friends bar at the bottom, mm-hmm. and of my friends who've, like, given it stars that are on the main page, and there's more who haven't. 4, 4.5, 4, 4.5, 4.5, 4.5, 4.5, 4.5, 4, 4. So like that's why I'm like, okay, I guess maybe just people I follow are people who have, you know, similar tastes to me, but I'm not running into too many detractors.
Thank God. Do notice that like the people I like the movie as much as I do.
Okay. I went down to the last page and there's 1 2-star and 1 3-star. But then there's way more 4.5s. Hey, and look, there's one. I have one Letterboxd friend that gave it 5 stars. No, I have 3 Letterboxd friends that gave it 5 stars. But yes, it's you and a couple of other people. It rules. I can't wait to rewatch it.
But we did kind of skip over, but like the final shot where it's like the whole movie's about like getting your shot.
Kiki... I literally just like needed a moment when I was picturing the final image of this movie.
Kiki's literally hand cranking this like old,
it's
like
a camera that's in a well kind of thing, because it's like,
yeah, it's like an old, yeah, but yeah. Like she's able to like capture her shot, but then Jordan Peele's like, I'm gonna get my shot, and he puts Daniel Kaluuya framed in the old, in an old west like entrance way with smoke in front of him, just like the most heroic American West shot you could ever do, and George feels like that's my shot.
Can I say something that's going to annoy you, but if Nick were here, would annoy him so bad he would throw down his headphones and stomp out of the room?
Sure.
Have you seen people who are like, he's not really there at the end, she's having a vision? oh no, now Dylan's taking off his headphones and throwing out of the room. I have seen people try to be like, is Daniel Kaluuya's character really, did he really survive? He wouldn't have survived. He wouldn't be there. Like, what I say to that?
No.
He's there. Also,
the whole point is they finally got it.
Also, although it's, you know, it's something that I think he has, I don't want to say struggled.
Did you hear
with
the one about like Maverick is dead the whole time?
I almost brought that up.
That one is not as egregious to me. It's
that
fine.
That one's more just like, you can... so there's a running joke on the How Did This Get Made podcast where Jason Mantzoukas always theorizes that the movie is a Jacob's Ladder scenario, also known as an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge scenario. But basically any movie, you can pick a point earlier on where maybe the person has died or is about to die and the entire movie takes place in their imagination.
In their mind.
So if you want to think of Maverick as having died in the opening air disaster and the rest of the time he's like in the Bardo or whatever... I don't care. You want to interpret it that way? Go nuts. That doesn't really like change the movie for me.
Nope one would change the movie.
But the Nope one for me, I'm like, no. And so what I was going to say is I think that Jordan Peele has wrestled with sort of how to end his movies optimistically,
Get Out was
negatively.
Huge...
There's a whole thing. So Get Out has this like really fun ending.
Real ending.
And you can watch a special feature where there's an alternate ending where...
I don't think it works as well.
I don't. It's and not to bring up Mallrats with Nick not here, but it's kind of similar to the like alternate Mallrats ending where I'm like, okay, you can end the movie with having your character shot to death, but like that's just not anything. I don't think that's clever or like I don't think that I think the shock value is not worth that being your actual ending. I don't think it's narratively satisfying beyond just like a ha-ha, gotcha, he's dead now. And so I think that's something that Jordan Peele realized and gave Get Out the awesome ending with Lil Rel Howery that it has, where,
yes,
you know, TSA saves the day in the end of Get Out. And then even Us, which has more of an ambiguous ending.
So we are both huge Nope's or Us supporters.
Yes, we are.
And Nick is a bit of a dread tractor. Yeah. The one point I have with that I agree with Nick is I feel like they should have revealed the twist in Us halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
Because it's so much better watching the ending fight between the two Lupita Nyong'os, knowing that one of them was supposed to be on top and the other one was supposed to be on the bottom,
so,
and then they switched.
What I'll say about Us, and this is a thought that I've had, but I also heard someone bring it up. I would credit which podcast it was if I could remember, but I heard someone bring this up recently, and it's a thought that I've always had as well, which is, so like specifically the ending of Us, there's a way to look at it where it's kind of this like creepy ending when she's like smiling at her son and you're like, but that's the,
I don't think that,
okay, but I don't think that is,
I think she's genuinely smiling at her
because
son. I think that woman loves her son.
The switch happened when they were children. It's
children.
An actual like sort of horror movie gotcha ending would be if they had switched as adults and now the evil, or not evil,
yes,
I shouldn't say, but the,
I mean, the whole point of
the
that
tethered
character
Lupita
trying,
was above, but this is the Lupita who raised those children.
And it's about this woman that tried
and
to escape the bottom.
And fought her way out. Maybe evilly, but fought her way out.
Yes. But like, she is trying to be reassuring and you realize at that point, oh.
Yeah.
No.
Now I'm just hearing the song from the end of Us.
Ring all the bells. And
oh my God. I can just. There are certain movies, and all three Jordan Peele's are now a part of that, where I can just sort of like close my eyes and just like
see
watch the last 30 seconds
the
of a movie
shot
in
of
my
all
head.
The,
yeah.
Yeah.
What a picture. Nope rules.
That's why I think Peele's the best director in modern Hollywood right now.
I sure like what he's
doing. I'm not going to go to say he's better than John Carpenter. Like
he would not. He would not allow you to say that. So watch out.
That was adorable.
Yeah.
But he's so good at directing endings, actors, set pieces,
and
genre.
As someone who, and this is sort of very like specific to my interest, but like as someone who came out of like a comedy background and then has gotten into horror genre filmmaking, like
also just one of the funniest skit comedians. Of all time.
Oh my God. I don't think there's anyone
out there. The NFL draft is the funniest.
The NFL, like the names of the players.
Like a, yeah.
Oh my God. Just anyone who hasn't seen Key and Peele, like.
I haven't seen a lot of Key and Peele, but like everything I see, I'm just like, these guys.
This is a good reminder for me. Key and Peele, during its run, did a couple of like Halloween episodes where they did like mostly horror themed sketches, which were actually pretty fucking scary, which is kind of, you're like, oh, this was always where Jordan Peele's like. But that coming out of a comedy background and bringing that to genre filmmaking, like in all three of these movies there are hilarious moments, like there are things that are straight up laugh out loud funny and heartwarming, and just his movies are not, they're not dour, they're not like depressing, like I was saying. So the idea to me that Nope is more fun to talk about than watch is just wild. Like I thought it was so watchable.
Insane. Yeah.
So, anyway, there's probably enough gushing about Nope, but what a movie.
Thumbs up.
So we have, we don't have like a fixed out time. We're coming up on 2 hours. Are there any other movies from this year that we
this
did
is what I wanted to
not talk
about.
About? Did you want to just wild card anything that you would like to recommend to the good people out there?
I don't know about recommend, but I think it's an interesting year. We talked about Scream earlier this year.
Yeah, Scream.
I watched other movies I've watched. Novelist Film is the other film that I would have as high as Nope would be right now.
Okay.
It's the newest Hong Sang-soo movie, which won't be much longer because he's having one premiere at Venice.
Because he's Hong Sang-soo, and if it's been 6 months, you're already out of date with the newest Hong Sang-soo movie. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's probably my favorite of his. It's very, very beautiful. I loved... John Boy has made 3 movies this year.
I was going to ask you to talk about these since I cannot.
The worst one easily was How to Score 10 Runs in the First Inning and Lose.
That one looked key. That's the one I was most interested in.
It's fine. It's pretty good.
Okay.
And I wouldn't dissuade anyone from watching it because it is enjoyable. But there's this randomness, emotional curiosities that go into a lot of Boy's movies. And we should also mention Alex Rubinstein, who is his writer and producer.
Yes.
They're a bit of a Powell and Pressburger team where Boy is more of the director and Rubinstein's more of the writer. But they do kind of both make the movies together. Section 1 is about a person that flew a plane into the 19...
That movie sounds upsetting.
It's not.
How many people die?
No one.
Okay. All right. Then I'll watch it.
That's the whole point of the movie.
No, I know. And I know that part of it you've told me is about how, like, if this happened, this many people are, like, there's sort of a breakdown of, like... sort of the timeline of events and stuff, but...
Yeah, but the whole movie is, like, this team has to beat the home team so badly that no one will want to be in the...
That section.
In the section anymore. And
so
no one was.
I know I've asked you this question 8 million times, and apologies that I'm going to do it again, because, you know, I'm going to pretend it's a public service. But so, like, where are these movies? How can people watch them?
They're all on YouTube.
They're just on YouTube, okay.
And then Captain Ahab, the story of Dave Steeb, is really their home run of the year, which is ironic.
No one hit any home runs in that guy's game.
Well, there's other games that they talk
about. Well, yeah.
But, like, it's just about a guy who was the most underrated, the most least known, greatest, who just kept on getting close to a perfect game and just, or maybe it was a no-hitter. I think it was a perfect game, and just couldn't get there, and it's wonderful. It's a beautiful movie. Some of the others that I saw, Jackass Forever, that was a fun movie.
I gotta watch that.
Probably my favorite Jackass.
Okay. I think I've only seen 1 and 2. I saw 1 in the theater, and that was a wild, wild, wild time. But I going to decide how ready I am to reckon with aging and mortality and then watch Jackass Forever.
There's just a beautiful overarching storyline about how we reckon with aging and mortality in this movie.
I love Johnny Knoxville. It's high. Matt could not be less interested.
Steve-O in Jackass Forever kind of steals the show.
Steve-O,
and
what a
could get a supporting actor bean for me. He's a wonderful performer.
He's kind of playing a character. I guess I would allow it.
The thing is a lot of it is him, because Knoxville's just doing the stupidest stuff in that movie, and he's the most of all of them sort of, like, commenting on, like, look, Johnny's, like, fucking 50, and he's getting run over by bulls and strapping his friends into chairs to get eaten by bears.
The unintended hilarious commentary in that movie that I haven't watched yet is that, like, Johnny Knoxville's hair turns white halfway through. because they filmed, I guess, a portion of it pre-lockdown, and it's not that Johnny Knoxville's hair turned white during lockdown, it's that he went gray ages ago, and he'd just been dyeing it, and during the lockdown, I think, like a lot of people, he was like, whatever, who cares, like, why am I dyeing my hair, who am I kidding, I'm 50, and so then, like, for the rest of the movie, he's just old Johnny Knoxville with, like, his silver hair now, and I'm just like, oh, I gotta watch this, I gotta watch these guys, and, like, so, like, Jackass took off basically, like, right when I graduated high school, like, right when I was in college. So it was, like, the sweet spot of... I saw Jackass 1 in the theater in college. I'm just not ready to reckon with those guys.
Okay.
But I love it for Steve-O. I love that he's still around. He's okay, you know? Like...
Yeah.
Ugh. All right. Sorry. Go on.
Also saw the Bob's Burgers movie, which... was good.
Yeah, I liked it.
Wasn't amazing, but a pretty good episode of Bob's Burgers that just happened to be an hour and a half long.
I thought it looked fantastic. To me, it felt like a movie. To the extent that an animated movie can feel like it has bigger set pieces and things, and the animation was, like, really, really beautiful. But yeah, it's fun. I recommend it.
And lastly, this week I watched a movie called The 355.
Oh, God. Even I haven't seen The 355.
Do you remember the trailers from that
of
movie?
Of course. Yeah. How was it? So they're assassins? What is their deal?
No, they're spies trying to stop, like...
They're lady spies. So for anyone who rightfully doesn't remember this movie that does not exist, they're lady spies. Spies who are ladies.
And each one is from a different country and has a different skill set. They kind of all kind of get abandoned by their home bases and they kind of have to go rogue to stop, like, the end of the world or so, whatever James Bond thing. The premise, some of the direction and the performances to a point are pretty watchable. Like, I don't think it's a waste
this at
your
some
time.
Point. I might throw it on.
It's definitely not a waste your time movie, but the characters aren't given enough, and which makes the stuff like Lupita Nyong'o's doing, it's like, she's so good. Could you give her like one more dimension, please?
Yeah.
Some of the action scenes are just so boring.
Yeah. That's like the
But there's some real funny twists and turns.
Of a trailer that I watched the trailer and I was like, I'm going to see that. And then I forgot it existed.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
It wasn't bad. I wouldn't tell you to get out and see it right now.
Okay, but it's like hanging out on Netflix or something, right?
Hanging out on Amazon Prime.
Prime, okay. It's one of the streamers. Okay. All right. Is that it for your honorable mentions? Okay. I have seen a lot of other movies this year. Probably the biggest one we didn't talk about is The Northman, the Robert Eggers sort of epic Viking movie. That's good. It's my number three movie of the year. I have it above Maverick on my list. I really loved The Northman. Wow. You know, again, do you like Robert Eggers' whole deal? Do you like stuff that is like disgusting? Because a lot of this movie is. People are just covered in mud and filth. And like people get their entrails ripped out. But it's good. I liked The Northman. It's went in directions I wasn't expecting. It was great. So I feel like it's completely forgotten, but I really liked The Northman. I've talked about in the podcast X, the Ty West movie, the sort of 70s set horror movie that's like a little Texas chainsaw, but what if instead of like just driving around Texas in a van, they were going to make a porno film. It was ruled. I loved it. I really, really, really loved it. There is a prequel coming out that I'm just getting bombarded with the trailer for. So if people have seen the trailer for Pearl.
Weird.
Yeah, that movie looks weird. I'm not sure what to make of that, but I'll check it out, obviously. I saw 3,000 Years of Longing yesterday, the new George Miller movie. It was really, really lovely. Like, it's not perfect, but it's beautiful. And, like, Idris Elba and Tilda Swinton just, like,
the goats
own the movie. Like, they just own the movie. It's so fantastic. There's some plot elements that don't entirely work for me, but, like, they sell it, so that's fine. I think I shouted out already on this podcast, Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, which is sitting on Hulu, which has an Emma Thompson performance for the ages. And apparently the studio did some like weird finagling where they got the Academy to accept it as eligible, even though
That's
it didn't
crazy.
Get a theatrical release. So that might be.
Hope and Emma Thompson gets an Oscar nomination.
Oh my God. People need to watch that movie. And then let me just do two other movies. Resurrection, which I watched and talked about way back during Virtual Sundance. That is out.
That's the Ferguson movie, right?
Not Rebecca Ferguson, Rebecca Hall.
Oh, God, I get those two mixed up all the time.
They're both great. It's fine. Rebecca Hall, sure. Tim Roth. It is, and I think it's out in a very limited theatrical release now, but it's going to hit Shudder in the next month or two. It is a weird little horror thriller that I really, really enjoyed. And then finally, I hinted at it or mentioned it a second ago, but Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. The A24 sort of like dark comedy, horror-ish thriller. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Like, so Sean mentioned on his podcast on The Big Pick that this is a movie that feels like he's just like, I am a generation too old for this movie. Did you feel that at all?
There's no way to say this. Maybe actually this is an indictment of myself, but no, I found it more relatable than I was expecting. And okay. I think that's more a result of me just being like terminally online. than it is of a demographic. You know, because, yeah, these characters are all 10 to 12 years younger than I am. They're all basically your age, essentially.
Sure.
But
the thing is, they're a little younger than me, and Scream is sort of the millennial version of this movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm not old enough to connect with Scream, and I'm not young enough to connect with Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
So I think if you have, like, a general awareness of, like, how people talk on TikTok, you'll, you know, you might not relate to those characters, but you'll mm-hmm. feel like, oh, I know who these people are.
Gotcha.
It's kind of where I'm at. And, like, I, you know, I have friends sort of over a range of, yeah, like, as young as you, and then, like, up to my age. And there are some, like, behaviors and dialogue and things that are still feel relatable, even that, you know, there are people in their 30s who talk this way too, basically. But it's fun. Like, that's a movie that, because it's A24, I actually have no idea what their streaming release is. It's also a movie that I would put on for my friends, like my sort of like annual Halloween movie curation marathon. Mm-hmm. People who are not big horror people, like, it's a horror movie, but it's just like people, it's more of like an Agatha Christie people trapped in a house movie than,
yeah,
you know, anything else. So, yeah, I do recommend. And I think that's pretty much all I wanted to highlight. We have some stuff coming up, hopefully, over the next.
Yeah, and I still need to put out the Beavis TV pod. That is my bad.
It'll come out. It'll be fine. And then we'll talk about Nashville in a couple weeks.
Cool.
Right? That's next, Nashville?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Looking forward to it. Wait, I'm sorry. Which movie did you describe as an Altman movie? What were we just talking about?
Ambulance.
Ambulance is Michael Bay's Altman movie. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I still see it. I think that's...
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I think that's good. But we'll talk about an Altman movie in just a couple of weeks.
Woohoo!
All right. Well, I think that's it. Thank you, as always, to our friend Scott Brady for our podcast artwork. You can find him on Instagram at artbyscott92 with underscores between all those things. And until next time, Roger out.
Roger out. All right, I got to run.
Oh, Nick just sent a text. Hold on. Let's just make sure it's nothing that we have to mention before we run away. Oh, no, it's a new John Carpenter track. Okay, well, that's very exciting. All right. Have a good rest of your Sunday. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Oh, I haven't even ended my recording yet. Time to end. Bye, Dylan.